Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
There is a rich and complex history worldwide of evidential communications with people we used to think were dead. That history is especially strong in the United Kingdom, although I've been talking with my guest today, and I guess there's a lot more in America than I was aware of. But 100 years ago, communicating with the so-called dead was a vibrant, nascent science. It was beginning. It could have taken over the world, and 100 years ago, we would be where we only are now. However, there are encouraging signs that what should have happened then is happening today. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is Ann Harrison. Ann's husband, Tom Harrison, was the son of a fantastic, but unknown largely, mid-century British physical medium. So we're going to learn a lot about physical mediumship today, which is an area where I am very inexpert. Minnie Harrison ran a home circle, and we're going to learn what that is. And he was a prominent British, with his mother. After her death, he was a prominent British spiritualist in the second half of the 20th century. He died in 2010 at the age of 92, but of course we know he didn't die at all. And since he had been working in this field for his whole life, he was very interested in figuring out how to do it from the other side. And he spent the next few years experimenting, and Anne was delighted to document his growing abilities. I love her book, just out. It's called Harrison Connections. Welcome, Anne. I'm so glad you're here.
Hello, Roberta. It's good. It's good to talk to you.
Now, you're speaking to us from Spain, right?
Yes. Yes. We've been living here on the Costa Blanca, on the east coast of Spain, for 15 years now. So I still say we, because he's still around. So I think of it as this.
Of course. Well, we have so much to talk about today. We don't have time to adequately to address all the things in the book. This is a terrific book. It's a book for researchers. It's a book for the archives. But it's also a wonderful book for anyone interested in better understanding what's really going on. Tom is a wonderful, wonderful presence. The love between him and his wife is palpable, and to see them sort of hugging across the dimensions is beautiful. I love this book. I told Anne I was up till 4 a.m. reading it. So if I seem sleepy, that's why. But Anne, we have a lot to sort of educate people about. First, tell us what spiritualism is.
Well, spiritualism, modern spiritualism as it's called, started way back in 1848, which largely from the Fox sisters in Hydesville in New York State.
Yes.
So, and with the wrappings that they had and the information that came through, they had a public meeting, and it promoted, and then it found so many other people were doing a similar thing, and that they were able to communicate. The Shakers, for instance, they had a very strong tradition of communicating with the spirits. So it's very much American tradition, but very quickly it spread over to England and was taken on board by people who, you know, had been thought of as witches, and, you know, you didn't talk about it. And it was all there, just waiting to explode. So in the 1860s to 1890s, it was just an amazing explosion of information and development and home circles and Lyceum, the Sunday school, where the teachings came through and the philosophy of how you should live your life, which is really what spiritualism is about, as well as being allowed to, you know, contact those who have gone on and who are desperately wanting to be in touch with us.
One of the things that is strange, really, is that it has taken deeper root in the United Kingdom than it has in the United States. Many people hearing us talk are cocking the ear and saying, I really didn't know that was going on here. And as you said before we started recording, there are, it's still quite There's a lot of it going on here, but it's not paid attention to. It's sort of considered to be on the edge by mainline Christians, but it's not on the edge at all. I did speak at one, I think it may have been one of the first spiritualist, easy to say, churches in the country in Chicago, and beautiful people, beautiful experience. And part of the service was people doing readings, which I found just amazing and fascinating and really uplifting. I mean, people were in tears from hearing from people that they had loved and thought they had lost but hadn't at all. So it's a way to open ourselves to spirit, which is very real and concrete. And as you say, it also teaches what Jesus taught in more direct ways, which is a reason all by itself, perhaps, to look at it more closely.
Yes.
So your, yes, your husband was major in spiritualism in Great Britain, and his mother. Tell us a little bit about Minnie, because I had heard her name actually, but I didn't know much about her. And you tell me the reason why was that she really didn't work for the public. She stayed in her home circle. Tell us first what a home circle is, and then we'll talk about Minnie a little bit.
Yeah, well, a home circle is just a group of people sitting together in the hope of contacting those who've gone before, their family, their friends, just in any way possible. And there are so many different ways. But when somebody then develops as a medium, or if you've already got somebody who is able to go into trance, who's able to contact them, and then the energy from all the people who sit, and there's no good number, right number. It depends just how many. The main thing is that there are harmony. There's harmony between all the people who sit, because it's that love and it's that joy and the friendship that everybody pulling together enables the spirit people to draw very close. And sometimes it may just be sitting with your hands on a table to start with, and maybe the table moves. It doesn't matter what size of table. It can be from a coffee table to a dining table. As I've witnessed.
A dining a table will spin on one table. Leg?
Well, not spinning, no, but rocking and dancing, rocking backwards and forwards. It had four legs. but it's just as that wanting that to contact, to be in touch with you know, what is possible, and find out who can do it, who can work out. Now, as it happened with Minnie, she'd already developed as a trance medium from being a teenager. She was the youngest of a family of 10, and she and four others in her family all developed trance, which means that they would, you know, just sit down quietly, seem to go to sleep, and somebody would speak through them. And Tom witnessed this at the age of 3 when his uncle Jack was sitting with his mother downstairs and the little one was in bed, and he heard this strange voice, crept downstairs. His mother beckoned to him, sat him on her knee, and he heard this very strange voice issuing from his uncle Jack. So he was involved the whole of his life.
Yes.
And it can take on many different forms. It can simply be somebody in deep trance and speaking, and the voice comes through them and the voice is very different. Or voices can develop and be away from the medium, out in the air, called direct voice, like the great medium Leslie Flint. He's probably one of the most well-known and the best direct voice medium there's ever been.
Yes, but many people, I should just say, if you Google him, you can find recordings. Many recordings survive of just what he was able to do, including getting the voices of famous people. I should mention, too, that this notion of home circles was very, very prominent in both Great Britain and in the United States in the latter part of the 19th, very early part of the 20th century. Before radio, sort of before electric lights even, it was much easier for people to think it was a good idea to maybe sit in the dark all evening, and they they would. The groups would have dinner. The gentlemen might retire to the cigar smoking room, and the ladies would sit with their hands on a table. And as you point out, Anne, often there would be one or two people there who developed extraordinary psychic gifts. The best of the early 20th century deep trance mediums were developed that way, is my understanding. But we have too much going on in our lives now. We got that darn TV, so very few people will sit in
circles. This is the problem.
Isn't that right?
The problem is getting sitters to sit in a home circle to dedicate themselves. And you may find you've got a very good sitter who then finds, it's interfering with their social life.
Yes.
Or with the bowls club or the tennis club. And, you know, and to get them to dedicate just constant year after year, because it's that lovely harmony. This is, I think, where with Tom, the development they had in the 40s and 50s, there was very little else going on, and they had the time and they had the friendship between them. They wanted to do it, and that was so special. So, I mean, one other medium.
So Minnie
just
really
want to mention.
When did Minnie die? She developed her gifts very well, but then she did transition.
Yes, 1958. She had cancer from 1940 and had numerous operations throughout the time. But they started sitting in 1946 once Tom was back from the war. He'd been in the army for the full 7 years. And one of the friends suddenly said, why don't we have a circle? And so they decided to sit, and within a few very, very short time, within 2 weeks, they were told to sit with a trumpet, which is like a big megaphone.
Okay, tell us about the trumpet. This is another thing people don't understand.
Oh, well, it's not a musical instrument.
No.
That I must make clear. It is just a conical-shaped, simple megaphone, just really a cone with the ends cut off. And the idea is that the spirit can produce a very small voice through the medium, sometimes very, very close to the mouth, sometimes that it was almost at the mouth. And the voice could be quiet, but was then amplified through the other end. And then as they could move the trumpet away, and spirit would support it on what they call psychic rods, usually made from the material called ectoplasm, and they would move it then to the person it wanted to speak to. So then you could hear this whisper of a voice coming through. And as Tom always said, if somebody was deaf in one ear, the trumpet would move round to the good ear so that they were able to hear it. Wow. Which happened with his dad, because he was deaf at one side. And so this was it. And it's just wonderful. Sometimes the voices can boom through this megaphone, and sometimes they are very, very quiet. It depends on the personality and on the expertise of the spirit person as to whether or not they're able to do it.
And here's another word we've got to define, and that's ectoplasm. Can you tell us what ectoplasm is?
It's a very elusive stuff. They say that it's connected with the pancreas, with the center part of the body. But we've been told from spirit by one of the communicators in Stuart Alexander's circle, Frieda, that it's between the physical and the spiritual. It's neither one nor the other, but it's a mixture of the spiritual matter, spirit matter within the body, and physical matter. And somebody who's got a good supply of this substance within the body, and a very, very few of them, are able to have it extracted from the body by the spirit people. And it'll come through any orifice in the body. It can come through the navel. Often it's got, just say, it's like the solar plexus area of the body, around the stomach area. It can come through the ears, the nose, the mouth, as well as the lower apertures as well.
Wow. And it's sort of not colored, right? It looks like a gauzy stuff almost.
Well, it can be in any way, any form. It comes out as a gas from the body.
Comes out as
invisible,
a gas.
As like air. It's like a cold air breathing. They did this for me in Stuart's circle in 98, 1998, all those years ago. And they gave us me a special treat one night. I was allowed to sit next to Stuart. And this, we'd been joking about what it sounded like, because as it came from him, from the mouth, it sounded like bubbles bursting, you know, like when you imagine sort of soap bubbles bursting, that little crackly sound, or cellophane, crinkly cellophane. And we were joking about what it sounded like. And I said it was like cellophane, just imagine it all stripped up and then just crunching it in your hand.
Yeah.
And then Michael, Stuart's brother, said, no, 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 it's cheesecloth. Because this is cheese what they cloth. Always
That's
said.
What they used to say it was, the so-called experts who actually were fools
That's
and charlatans
right.
tried to debunk cheese the truth. So. Yes. But it's not cheesecloth
like, so
at
joke
all.
Practice.
And the, what they do with it is a variety of things. They can make a voice box to go inside that trumpet. They can make a voice box in air, which Leslie Flint would do. They can clothe what would be a non-material spirit. And this is something which Tom has done. He's let himself be clothed in ectoplasm. And I loved this statement. It was like, it's like walking out of the water wearing a wet overcoat. It feels heavy.
Yes.
It feels
so very, very heavy.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that was fascinating, how it would feel to be cloaked in this stuff. But when they're cloaked in it, they can be solid and, you know, look like themselves and walk up to you and give you a hug.
This is what Tom said. Well, of course, he has done it, but I've not seen him do it because the seances at the moment with it, they're always in the dark. But with their seances, because it was a closed and only eight and the energies were right, they were able to have a red light and to see this happen and to see a spirit grow from a pile of ectoplasm in the middle of the circle.
Wow.
To just, you know, eight people sitting round and there it was, just growing and growing in front of him. But so many of them, and they were so solid, and they were able to go and touch them. In fact, there's a lovely story from a letter in Tom's book where a girl was told by her mother that when she went and sat, her mother came out from spirit, clothed in ectoplasm, and this lady stood up to shake hands with the spirit. And the spirit's mother said, "We don't do that," and gave her a great big hug and kissed her.
Wow.
So it wasn't the physical person making the movement, the spirit person did it.
Yes.
And this was the strength of the forms that they had in their circle and in so many others. I mean, like Alec Harris, the Welsh medium, he was amazing, an amazing medium. And I've just been so privileged to be able to do his book and to meet his son and his grandson as well in doing the books.
So but let's say what fantastic. Why the darkness? Because people are saying, aha, they have it in the darkness so that they can fake it all. Well, the problem with ectoplasm is that it's a product of the body, which usually is not detached from the medium's body. Now, you talk about one medium who can detach it, but customarily it's almost like an external organ of the medium, and it's very sensitive.
Absolutely.
To electric light or natural light.
Yes.
I think this is something they can be desensitized about. And as you say, in a closed family circle where we know everybody who's there and all the energies are positive, it's possible to use very low light or red light and things are visible. But nearly all, at least of whom I'm aware, nearly all physical mediums are afraid to be harmed. Because if you unexpectedly turn light onto that ectoplasm, it will snap back very often right back into the medium and can damage the medium. There was a medium killed in the mid-50s, I think. Don't remember her name.
Yes.
When someone...
Helen Duncan.
Who was it?
Helen Duncan.
That's right, Helen Duncan. There was a police raid, and the police, you know, everybody, and they killed the medium because all her ectoplasm slapped back into her so fast.
It did, and it caused a massive hemorrhage, internal hemorrhage, and she died just a few weeks later, but in extreme pain. And, her granddaughter, Margaret Hahn, is trying to, is doing a lot of work at the moment. They've never managed to get, because she was a convict convicted of witchcraft, purporting to produce spirits. But this was in the wartime, and what had happened is that a sailor had materialised to his mother, and the government hadn't released the notice that the ship had gone down. So they were a bit worried in case she let out other secrets, and the only way to shut her up was to put her in jail.
Oh, my word, I didn't know the backstory. It's just folklore that she was killed this way. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
And talk about ignorant stupidity. Oh.
Yes, total. Later, of course, they continued to follow her because this sort of seance and take money for it was still under the Witchcraft Act. It was illegal. And it was because of her death that we finally got the freedom to be able to work in whatever way we wish.
Can you believe there were witchcraft acts even then?
From the 1700s, and it had never been repealed. Yeah. By the 1950s, after her death, they did.
Yeah. Well, all right. So I hope that we've given people at least a grounding. This is an area where I need to do a lot more study. I have other guests coming on in future weeks who have different sort of areas of expertise. And you and I will talk a bit more, Anne, as the hour goes on, about physical mediumship. But first, I would like to talk a little more about Tom and his experience, which I think is fascinating. Before we do that, I'd just like to say this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch. And you can learn more about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our wonderful guest is Anne Harrison. Her book is terrific. I was up all night reading it. It's Harrison Connections, the story of her husband, who died at the age of 92 and was a prominent British spiritualist. The story of his voyage after his death in figuring out from where he was there how it works, because he'd only been working in it from this end. And that part was fascinating, to me especially, because like him, I feel pretty expert at this stuff, but I'm not there. I'm not communicating from there. And his first communications were pretty tentative, weren't they? I mean, this is harder than I thought, kind of. And he didn't do full sentences, that kind of thing.
That's right. Just actually, because what he was having to do was to make somebody else's voice box, larynx, work. Because his first communications were working through trans mediums. There was somebody else's voice box. It wasn't his.
Yeah.
So he had to think how to make things move. And so the first one he did very well, although he got very tired. But the other spirit people were supporting him. When he tried to work through his great friend Stuart Alexander, then he had more problems just trying to get the words out and to get people to listen to him. And so each time, each medium he worked through, it was different. And so he had a lot of learning to do and learning to manipulate in different ways. And of course, he's worked through, I think, about 6 different trans mediums in total. But he's also now, of course, done direct voice, where he speaks through the ectoplasmic voice box. So he's having great fun.
He's having fun.
Right.
And
he really is.
Someone said to you, oh dear, I hope you don't mind my saying this, but he says he's much happier there. But you didn't mind hearing that at all, did you?
No, I didn't, because this is what we've always said. I mean, one of the things that Tom has told me, and it's on, there was only ever 2 recordings made of his mother, and the one was the trance sitting, and an old lady came back to speak to her grandson. And when she realized, she was speaking through a medium, but when she realized she was back on the earth, she said, "But I don't have to stay, do I? I can't go back."
Right. That's the thing people don't get. When we're here, we think this is the important place, but they know better and they're a lot happier.
But
he says it's beautiful, much more beautiful than we've been really led to believe, right?
Yes.
But he doesn't tell you much in detail. I looked for.
No, I think almost because it's almost beyond words. I mean, there are many books, many channeled pieces come through what the world is like, and he knows that. But the one time he said, that was almost his first words to me, "It's beautiful." And I said, "More than, you know, as much as you thought." He said, "Much, much more."
Isn't that wonderful?
But because the effort of trying to speak and to get it through, I don't think he could. He just was, it was overcome by it. It was so lovely. And to be with everybody he knew as well, old friends and all the family again. So that's very, very special for him.
Was he so emotional in life as he seems to be in these seances?
Yes.
He was?
Yes.
Okay, so he's his own self then, for sure.
Yes.
Because he's it's almost embarrassing to read some of it. I mean, he's just absolutely so in love with you and just a loving, loving man. What a wonderful husband he must have been.
He was a wonderful man. And, I mean, wonderful to the family as well, to his family. As I say, he's got six children. And particularly to the young one, Wendy, who's always his baby.
It's a lovely love story. I mean, I think people who are in a good marriage or in a good long-term loving relationship might like to know that if you want to do it, and there are actually many others I've heard of, if you want to do it, you can keep that love going, even if, as in your case, there's a great difference in age, or for one reason or another, one goes far before the other. You can keep that love going. It's not quite the same, but it's pretty good. Wouldn't you say?
It is. And I mean, one thing as well, because of developing sensitivity and awareness over the years, that I now know when he's around and when he's especially pleased. I just, like the other day, I was saying about something, "Oh, that is absolutely wonderful, love, isn't it?" And I could feel it. And I just came up in goosebumps all over. It was like I said, he was giving me a great big hug.
Yes.
And that's what happens. And other times, if he's trying to make himself me aware of him, I'll feel my hair being ruffled.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Good for him. If you're in a loving relationship with someone who has died and this is not happening to you, it doesn't mean you weren't loved. We're all different people. And there is so much to do there, much more than here. I mean, we never sleep. We don't need to. And we're onto a lot of things. But my experience has been in talking with people that if it's important to you to keep that love relationship going and to keep the contact, the kind of contact Anne has with your spouse or whoever has died, talk about it beforehand. You know, give each other a hug, have a little cup of tea or something before the fire some evening and say, "Now, if one of us goes, why don't we make a pact that we're going to try to stay in touch and just learn a little bit about how it happens?" One of the reasons it works for the Harrisons so well is that they were experts in this area before his transition, so it was a natural continuation. But if it's not happening in your life, you will see him very or her very, very soon, so no worries. I just think it's a lovely grace note, don't you, Anne, to be able to continue the relationship as you do?
Absolutely, because I say it's a support system, because you say when you find, you know, your support system has gone, your physical support system is not there, someone that you've relied on to bounce ideas off or to be there to look after, and they're not there any longer, then you're on your own. But to continue that contact and just to, for them as well, because they're having to adjust to be without you. I mean, when my first husband was dying, when he had cancer, he said, "But what am I going to do without you?" And I said, "But I'm the one that's got to stay here."
Let's tell that story, too. What was your first husband's name?
Norman.
It was Norman, right?
Yes.
Well, Norman and Tom have become fast friends. where they are now. So if someone listening has had more than one marriage, especially if the first in the first you were widowed, and you're worried, this was one of the last things my mother-in-law said to me, and she died at 94, I think, 93 or 94, was, but I've had two husbands. Who's my husband there? And so I, you know, told how Jesus said we neither marry nor give in marriage. So I said, you can have them both. But it looks as if you're really going to be able to have them both, Anne, because they're great friends.
It does, and as I say, we don't know what's going to happen, but they say it's so different because you have that loving relationship with all sorts of people.
Yes.
And if you haven't had a loving relationship, or you never want to see them again, then you probably won't see them again.
Right.
You don't have to be tied to someone you don't like. You don't have to have that. Because once we're back in the spirit world, they tell us you mix with people of like minds, people who have got the same sort of outlook.
I think this is a wonderful point. We want to emphasize it. Because when I've told people that you can continue to live together after death, some people have said, what if I don't want to? It's very important to know you're not married after death. There is no marriage. And you can perfectly well do whatever you like. So it's not, you can go, you don't, as you say, you never have to see them again if that's your choice. So it's, there's really no bad news associated with the afterlife. Isn't that, hasn't that been your experience too?
Absolutely. As I say, a lot of people sort of say about, well, you realize that you've done something wrong and you'd like to put it right. And it's more difficult if you can't make contact through a medium, or your family doesn't have that contact. Then it's very difficult to put those things right.
Right.
And I've known a couple of instances where we took a friend along to a sitting with Stuart Alexander, and his father came through. Now, his father had abandoned the family when he was quite small, and he did not have any good memories of his father.
Oh.
And his father pleaded for forgiveness. He knew he'd been wrong in doing it, but the situation was that he had to do it, but he did need to ask for forgiveness before he could move on and make any progression in the spirit world. And we had to have a long talk with our friend before we got him to see how important it was.
Yes.
And how that loss in his early life had made him the person who he was as he was growing up.
Yes.
We've got to look at it from both sides, because something that hurts us maybe make us kinder in acknowledging other people's hurts. And we don't understand all the grand pattern that is there of the way that we have to learn lessons in our lives. And what seems to be a horrible thing is probably something that we've come here especially to learn.
To learn, yes. I tell people all the bad things that happen are like those machines in the gym that you selected to use to strengthen certain spiritual muscles. So if we take them that way, we can forgive. And as you say, forgiving is important. But I think you made another wonderful point. If you've harmed someone else, especially it seems to be children, if you've harmed children, try very hard. I know this is a tough thing to do. Try to contact them and tell them you're sorry and ask them to forgive you. This is very important, because apparently this is the hardest thing for people to forgive during their life review. My personal experience was that my father would show up in the distance when I was doing all the test readings that I did in the latter part of it. For a time, I thought all psychic mediums and spiritual mediums were charlatans, because I never got a good reading. That's changed, but I went through a long period. But anyway, all of these mediums would describe him accurately, but they couldn't get him to talk. 20 years after his death, he came to to a reading that my daughter was having, and said, for the first time he spoke, and he said, will you please ask your mother and her sister to forgive me for messing up their childhood? Now, I didn't even feel we had a messed up childhood. My father had been an alcoholic, but, you know, that's life. But he had blamed himself for 20 years and not been able to move on. So surely if you have a parent or someone older person who is close to death and you need to forgive them, forgive them. I don't care what they did in the past. It doesn't matter now. And if you've hurt, especially a child, it's important to ask them to forgive you, because this is not the only story I've heard like this. I mean, your story is one, and I hear them a lot. People say, oh, my father did this or that horrible thing, and he tells me he can't move on, but I don't want him to move on. That kind of, I'll never forgive sort of thing. And I say what you must have said to your friend. You know, you got to take a bigger picture here. It hurts you as much as it hurts them if you won't forgive.
Yes, because you're causing that problem for yourself when you get over there.
Yes, it's going to be harder for you to forgive yourself when you get there if you can't, you know, master this particular exercise. Exactly right. What a wonderful point to make. Thank you. Okay, now let's talk a little more about Tom. He got to be very good, it seems, and that's part of the fun of your book, is watching his skills grow. Not uniformly, but by and large, that seems to have happened, right? He got to the point where he was almost dancing a jig in ectoplasm. Not quite, but that's sort of where he got, and he was speaking in a booming voice after a while. That must have been very satisfying for you to observe.
Yes, it was, because I just know from what he told me how difficult it is, and it's just because he said very early on he'd already forgotten how heavy the Earth's atmosphere was when he came back, that he'd just got this lightness in yes. spirit. And to come back and to try and get into ectoplasm, he'd really forgotten how difficult it was to control it. Yeah. And even at one of the experienced ones, when he came back just 11 months after he passed, when he came back at Stuart's, which we think of as like the home circle,
yes.
that this was a special circle that we sat in for a number of years. And when he materialised and had hold of my hand, he then tried to speak, but the emotion which he always felt, just that contact, he wasn't able to control the weight of the ectoplasm and speak. And a very, very experienced communicator at Stuart's, Walter Stinson, said it would have been expecting too much of him to be able to control the ectoplasm and to speak to you.
Wow. And there was another visitor to one of the circles. I think his name was Eric, and he said nobody there knew him, but he said he had been dead for a long time, and he was now in a group where they were trying to figure out how this all worked, so he came to you all for instruction, right? Do you remember that story?
Yes, that's right, because Tom had met up with him in the spirit world and was really sort of encouraging him to learn how to reuse the larynx so he could speak through a medium. Because in the spirit world, they don't use physical speech. They don't use sound. They use thought. So everything's done by thought. Well, you were saying, you know, put your brain in gear before you open your mouth.
Yes, they have to do that, right?
What words are going to come out? Well, there they literally have to think how to manipulate a medium's voice box, or a direct voice, or an independent, you know, an external voice box in the case of a good trance or physical medium. They've got to think how to make those sounds again. And he'd come back to, as I say, a good friend of Tom and myself, that Tom had worked with a lot, Kate. And this particular occasion, he'd come back to work out how to speak through a medium so that he could go back, because he was part of an experimental group, so he could go back and teach the others how actually to make sound again, so that they could communicate easily through a trans medium.
See, we think of us as experimenting with how to communicate with the people in the afterlife. And one of the things that we've learned is they have the same problem we have. The barrier is really one of energy. And it's easy for people to sort of better imagine why it's a problem if you realize your mind is like a TV set that's tuned to this channel and to that body on this channel. And the other areas where the dead are really are very close. They're in fact in the same place, but they're on higher frequencies. So for you to talk with the dead or them to talk to you is not easy. They've got to lower their vibratory rate to be pretty close to yours. But then they've still got the problem that they are of a different kind of material than you are. They're of energy purely. You're of sort of in this illusory matter stuff. So it's almost like your Channel 5 and your Channel 7 newsmen on air trying to talk to one another without a cell phone. How could they do that? And the fact that we are doing it now so well, it really has required tremendous efforts from their side as well as from ours. We face a common problem, which is that there's an energy barrier, which is very hard to breach.
It is. And it's having the knowledge with sufficient people in the spirit world who want to do it or who have experimented with it to be able to teach others. When people say, but I've not heard from so-and-so and I've not heard from my dad, but maybe yes. He hasn't met up with a medium who can actually pick up his thoughts.
That's a very
and pass
good
on the messages.
They've got to find a medium too. That's exactly right. Now, yes. the medium will put out a call. I mean, if you go to a very good, perhaps spiritual medium, that medium, who are the most common ones in the United States at least, that medium's guides will put out a call to your loved ones. It's sort of, I don't know how they do it, but we're told that in your mind will appear exactly what's going on. It's like there's a bulletin board in your head and there'll be a notice on it saying, you know, in my case, it would say, come meet with Roberta at this time and place, and they'll show up. When I did a reading in February, I hadn't done one in more than 10 years because, as I say, I didn't believe in them to begin with, but I thought my mother wanted to contact me. There were 70 people on a dairy farm in, I'm assuming, level 3 of the afterlife, and they all wanted to talk to me. It was great. But they had gotten that little bulletin board notice in their minds that this was where they could talk to me. If you aren't someone who is customarily, you know, sort of in this field, it may be harder. I just don't know. But it isn't as easy as we think. They're not sitting on the edge of a cloud swinging their legs and hoping you'll ring them up. That it just, life there is much more complex and interesting than it is here. And
yes.
It's not easy, really, to reach a certain person at a certain time.
Some people just don't want to bother to come back. They're just enjoying things so much.
That's right.
And others spend a long time trying to influence their partner or their daughter or whatever to go along to a spiritualist church or to go along to a medium so they can talk to them. They spend a long time using telepathy, really. Why don't you do so-and-so? Won't you so-and-so?
That's
what
right.
about going to so-and-so?
Yes, yes.
And to persuade them to do it and to get there. I mean, just wonder why you walk down the street one day. I think Arthur Findlay said about it. And he walked past a notice that he'd never seen before about a spiritualist church. And he went in. And that was how he came to meet up with the wonderful voice medium, John Sloan, who completely changed Arthur Findlay's outlook about spirit and about religion and everything, and so followed all the wonderful books. And he eventually, of course, left his wonderful house at Stansted Hall to the Spiritualist National Union as a college.
Yes.
All because he noticed one day a sign that said Spiritualist Church.
And we know that's the kind of thing that our guides will do. One of the things that they do a lot in our lives is to get us to notice something, either a meaningful number on a digital clock or a notice for a church or a license plate or just notice something. They can cause us to direct our attention in an area where we had not been going to direct our attention. I didn't understand this fully until recently, but apparently that's something they commonly do. So
yes,
which is lovely. We all have this terrific set of friends, one or several, who are our spirit guides, and they are trying to help us do the best we can with this lifetime and learn the most and grow the most spiritually. And so take a moment and thank your spirit guides. guides because they're doing the best they can. The very fact that you're listening to us now is probably something they've prompted you to do. And so we thank them as well for asking you to join us today. What's the most interesting sort of thing to share that you can recall from sitting with a materialization medium?
I've had so many.
Pop question, so many. Yes.
Very, very difficult. But I mean, I have to say, just to feel Tom's hands, he was ruffling my hair and moved his hand down my arm, took my hand, and was to feel the shape of his hand. Because before I'd had touches from Stuart's other communicators, from Dr. Barnett and from Walter Stinson, who has got very big hands. But Tom's were long fingers and very bony. There was no sort of flesh on them at all. And that was the hand that held mine. So very, very different. And so special. And then to hear the special sound that when he was overcome with emotion, just giving you a hug, he would give this special, just loving you so much. That came across.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And nobody else in the room could have known that.
Yes.
Nobody knew it. Nobody had heard it but me. And that was so very, very special. That's one. I've had my hands held. I've touched ectoplasmic hands. I've seen ectoplasm lit with lights. But I think that has to be the very, very best.
Yes.
Just that personal contact and the recognition that he, from the spirit world, made his hand exactly as his physical hand. That just proved that, you know, that the personality goes on. And it just is just wonderful, just wonderful. And I'm so privileged to have been introduced to it and to have had all the years with Tom learning all about it and to have been chosen by the spirit folks to learn so much because I'm able to pass it on to other people. Just been making a note of it, and over the last 20 years since I started sitting in physical circles, once I got to know Tom, and they just gave me so many gifts that I just feel
that's
so
wonderful.
Fortunate.
That's a wonderful tribute to him. Actually, I mean, if you had not met him, you would not have had these experiences. And
not
just
itself.
The knowledge you have, and the fact that you share it, you have your own little publishing company now too to help others share it. What is your publishing company called?
Saturday Night Press Publications. So short is SNPP.
And this is because this is what Minnie's Saturday, her circle was called, Saturday Night.
That's right. They sat on a Saturday night, and so they called themselves the Saturday Night Club.
Yes.
And Tom used it when he wrote his first small book, telling everybody about his mother's mediumship, the little yellow book, Visits by Our Friends from the Other Side. And he used that. So when we wanted to get his book out in 2004, Life After Death, Living Proof, nobody would take it on board. And we just didn't know what to do. We approached 14 top publishing companies who did spiritualist books and did people's stories, and they wouldn't look at it. So, but Spirit had it all in hand.
Yes.
We had to be... Tom and Lisa Butler, I don't know if you've heard of them.
Oh, sure.
Who run the transcommunication set up in America.
Yes.
They got in touch wanting to use one of Tom's photos. And we said what we were doing. And Tom said, well, we've just done our book through Lightning Source. And that was it.
Yes.
And I contacted them and how many books now? About 30 books later.
Good for you.
And I'm just getting them out as ebooks as well because being part of Ingram's, they have an ebook section. And so the Harrison Connections and Life After Death will soon be available as ebooks as soon as we can get the e-tailers, as they call them, to take it on board.
Now, is it available from Amazon as well?
The book's available. We're hoping that they'll take it onto Amazon as an ebook. It's only been only came up yesterday. We managed to get it out,
yes.
So it's just as soon as they find it's available, and hopefully they'll take it on board as well. I'm looking forward to that.
The book is called Harrison Connections, because there are many of them, and it is, I think, a wonderful, wonderful documentation of things very few people even know about, and it's entertaining, and it's a great love story. So how few books have that combination of things going for them. I really recommend this book. My little secret is that although many people I interview on Seek Reality have written books, I do a lot of skimming because I have a lot of other things to do too, and I can't read a book a week. This one I read cover to cover. I couldn't put it down. So Harrison Connections, Ann Harrison, and what's your website, or how would people get in touch with you if they wanted to?
Well, through the website, which is www.snppbooks.com.
Okay, it's snppbooks.com.
That's it.
Okay, I'm so sorry we've come to the end of our time. You and I could talk all day. In fact, we probably will after we stop recording. But I have to say, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. When you fully grasp all of what that means, just as the Harrisons are doing, it's going to change your life completely for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. As you know, my nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which is about afterlife communication. I'll have to write a new edition now after having met Anne. I'm learning so much. You'll find details about all my books. I also write novels, plus my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week will be Jock Brokus. Jock is a spiritual medium and afterlife researcher, and he's just founded an organization dedicated to advancing afterlife knowledge. I think you'll enjoy him, and he has the cutest Scottish accent you've ever heard. Now, this week, we've been talking with Ann Harrison. Her book, Harrison Connections, details the fascinating process by which her husband, Tom, learned after his death how to be an afterlife communicator from where he is now. And this is, I think, a joyous, joyous story. Dear friends, it's important you understand the study of the afterlife, whether from this side or from that side, is a genuine science. This is the century that science is going to transform the world. And the fact that those people who call themselves scientists are for the most part still afraid to touch all of these facts, all of this evidence, all of this information, actually might be good news for you and me, because like Tom and Ann Harrison, we can have the fun of doing cutting-edge science and making some of the big discoveries for ourselves and for the world. Join us. The study of what happens at and after death is a tremendous project where each of us is able to make a real difference. And I'm telling you, the best thing about doing this work is that every bit of it is good news. What can you say? What else in the world can you say that about? For now, though, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.